Wondering how to navigate local, city, state, or the federal government in order to grow your business, secure funding for your nonprofit, or advance your organization's agenda? Welcome to Lobbying Insider, a podcast that brings listeners to the intersection of business and government to provide a rare perspective on how things actually get done. We will dive into some pressing current issues, provide keen observations from the past, and keep an ever-watchful eye on what's coming next. I'm your host, Zach Fink, Director of External Affairs at Davidoff, Hutcher & Citron. Glad to have you with us. And we are joined by a special guest today from St. Francis College. Tim, can you introduce yourself?
Sure. Thank you. My name is Tim Cesari, and I am the proud president of St. Francis College in Brooklyn.
Well, it's great to have you with us. Tim, tell us just a little bit about St. Francis, its history, what it means to Brooklyn.
Sure. First, thank you, Zach, for allowing me this opportunity. And thank you to DHC also for allowing me this opportunity to talk about this wonderful college that I represent in the borough of Brooklyn and well beyond. Brooklyn is a community that's really a microcosm of the world in how we represent all people, all stripes, all walks of life. St. Francis College is emblematic of that. Started 165 years ago by the Franciscan Brothers of Brooklyn, with a hope and a dream that they would create an institution that would avail students, potential students who otherwise would have been denied a college education, the opportunity to attain a college degree within the context of the means of their family, the needs of the community, and their Franciscan message along with that put out into the world for the thousands and thousands of students who walked our hallways and passed through our doorways in all those years. And I'm proud to say that that tradition and mission and vision carries on through today. And my role is to make sure it's preserved and make sure it stays on for centuries to come.
A lot of people today would say that summer, especially in urban areas, places like New York City, may be turning away from faith a little bit. But faith is a big, important value here for you, for the institution. And how do you instill that in young people going forward?
That's a great question, especially in today's climate. Many young children don't even identify with any organized religion, Catholic, Jewish, Protestant, Muslim. They don't identify. However, when they come to St. Francis College, what's interesting is they begin to get curious about faith. We've got a beautiful chapel within the college. And right next to it, we've got an interfaith prayer room for any student of any religion, any practice that wants to come and pray and practice their faith. And interestingly, students have come to me and they've said, you know, President Cesari, when I first came to the college, I didn't really have faith, and now I do, and I found it. And I don't even ask them what faith it is. We don't really care what name you call God. I think, though, especially today, with all that's going on in the world, which is well publicized with the news cycle, if we can call it a news cycle.
keeps morphing and changing and getting worse, so yeah.
Exactly. They're confused about many things. Yeah. And, you know, without using any of the acronyms that are in the press today that the governments are fighting over, we kind of transcend all that because our Franciscan values always welcomed everyone, every walk of life, every religion, every race, every creed. And we celebrate that and we lead with that in these type discussions because kind of the way we say to them, you know, well, where have you been? You're just catching up to us.
Right. So in many ways, the same values have persisted for all those years you talked about, the, in terms of acceptance, in terms of leading people towards faith, but respecting people's different ways of looking at it.
Sure, the values stay the same over time, but the way you go about presenting those values may change. Students today will get prayer on their iPhone. They'll go to websites and seek faith. So you have to adapt. The values remain, but the tactics and the strategies that you use to get there may change. For example, yesterday was Ash Wednesday, and Brother Greg Cellini, who runs our ministry, went into the subways to dispense ashes on people in the subway. Because that would never be, when I was a child, that wasn't done. But now we are meeting people where they are and bringing faith to them in the subway, which I think is entirely appropriate in today's world.
That's great. Yeah, and for people who may want to do that but may not have the opportunity, I think that's a great way to do it. Let me ask you just a little bit about your history, how you came in, what was the sort of reason to bring you in, what was going on, and then we can get a little bit into some of the changes that you've made to kind of set St. Francis on a new course.
Sure. So I had a multi-decade career in advertising, marketing, media, communications, worked for the world's largest conglomerate in that area. I will say it was WPP, which owned agencies Ogilvy & Mather, Young & Rubicam, Gray Advertising, and on and on and on. So I had this wonderful career. I joined the board of St. Francis College. I'm a kid from Brooklyn. I was born in East New York, and I grew up on those streets, Brooklyn, Queens, and Manhattan. I joined the board of St. Francis College as a way to give back for all the blessings that I've had in my life. Being on the board, I learned a lot about higher ed. I learned a lot about the inner workings of higher ed, and I became very interested in higher ed. Situation evolved during COVID that I retired, if you will, from advertising. Sounds funny to say that I retired, but advertising is an industry that doesn't have a lot of gray-haired people. I don't know if you've ever noticed that.
Yeah, burned out a little bit, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
situation came up where there was an opportunity for me to take on a role in the college. The board and I discussed it, and I got in there, and I began to go to work. And I used the skills that I had in my world outside of higher ed into the world of higher ed, and I think I introduced something that was absolutely necessary and important, for higher ed.
Did St. Francis need a kind of new direction? Did it need an injection of that kind of marketing background that you have, for example, kind of let people know it's here, it's a resource, we want to recruit people from Brooklyn and beyond?
Well, you know, selfishly, I could say it did. But unselfishly, I can also say it did. I come from a world where I understand people as clients and consumers with an expectation of what they want delivered for what they're investing in. And I didn't see a strong enough connection between what the students were investing in, a marketable education, something that they could go out into the marketplace and earn a living. I didn't see a strong connection in that promise being fulfilled. And in my other world, if you didn't fulfill that promise, your clients, your consumers, in this case, your students, would go away. So I use those skills to make that connection stronger so that the students know when they come to the college, they have that direction and they know what the outcome should be and they know their role in that outcome. It's not ambiguous. Some of the things I found in colleges were akin to applying for a mortgage. All these twists and turns and
financial literacy
and that office and see the bursar, see the registrar, see admissions, see enrollment, see advancement. These young people, they're not sophisticated in these ways. Also, they don't have a tolerance for bureaucracy. They grew up with the iPhone.
Right.
They want the app and the transaction right away. But colleges, for the most part, as I have found, are decentralized operations that have not adapted and have not changed to that mindset with a focus on the student. Much of it exists to serve itself, and I don't think that that's a good formula for success. So bringing those skills that I had from advertising and marketing communications into higher ed, I think was a positive for higher ed. And I do see more colleges adapting and adopting that.
And it's important to have real-world applications, to your point, right? I mean, that kind of training where you're preparing young people for the actual world they live in. You had mentioned at one point when we talked offline about the nursing program. Can you tell me just a little bit about that? I mean, even with all the major changes.
You have to be able to adapt to change. What colleges and universities are doing that I think is incorrect is they're not taking a page out of the people who have been through this and have done this already and learning from that. One of the things that I learned in my prior career is every company that I went into to do an acquisition, do a merger, the first thing the management told me is, Tim, you don't understand. My company is different. And I would come to find out that they're absolutely not different.
They're not different at all.
They're right. More the same.
Right. Right.
There are nuance, subtleties, but essentially they're not different. So all colleges and universities operate the same. The mistake they make is, I believe, they try to take the existing model and tweak it and try to improve it, but the foundation is faulty.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing to do is to create a new model and replace the old model with the new model. To me, that's the way to do it, because if you try to go through the channels that are currently not working and not functioning well, you'll never get what you want because there's too much to unfold, too much to unravel, and it's too decentralized.
So it was not user-friendly for students, in other words.
In my opinion, and I think it's an educated one, no pun intended, I don't think it was at all. You can't scale complexity.
Mm-hmm.
You can scale simplicity.
Right.
So every college says, we want to grow. We want to grow. And along with their growth model is increased complexity. And complexity is the enemy of growth. So you need to make things simple. Simplify operations. Embrace technologies. Make sure that your staff, what I call the talent in an organization, uses technology to optimize the experience of the student. The student experience is something that is talked about in very vague terms, but not put into practice in a way that the students realize, hey, this is seamless. This was great. And quite frankly, it's not just the colleges, universities, the regulators, the state, the federal government, the layers of bureaucracy, I think, create challenges that are not necessary. Even the best talent can't cut through a deep, deep bureaucracy. It gets lost. And matter of fact, it will leave because you don't want to have to deal with that.
And tell me what that was like. I mean, was it difficult? I know there were some staff that had to depart. Were changes that were needed tough to implement? Did you get resistance? And is it ultimately now, are you through that and on a better course?
Sure. I come at this from many angles. The way I say about change is you can do three things with change. You can push back against it. You can pretend it's not there, or you could try to shape it. I prefer people working in any institution who are the ones who try to help shape change to best fit the organization. I don't want to sound cliche and say that people say, because that's the way we've always done it. That's too easy.
Mm-hmm.
What the folks in higher ed...
I've also found that that's the wrong answer in corporate America.
Completely wrong.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What people in higher ed didn't realize is that in order for them personally to maintain and increase their own skill set, they need to embrace these technologies because their jobs are primarily administrative. And unless they embrace technologies, they become less marketable as time goes on. So if they want to do a career change, if they want to try something else, and they don't have the requisite skill set to even contemplate doing that, any institution that doesn't train its staff, doesn't give its staff access to the best technology, doesn't invest in training and development, and doesn't want them to be the best they could possibly be is doing them a disservice. That's part of the mission as well. The mission doesn't just live with the students. How can we make the students better if we don't make ourselves better? It's one and the same, right? How can you teach if you can't be taught?
Of course.
It doesn't make sense. So I've imposed accountability. I want to make sure we're harnessing and using technology in the modern day. Any questions of volume, and processing data have to be answered with technology first. Then the people can influence, download reports, manipulate data to gain insights that inform strategies. But you have to start with the best technology. And by the way, there are so many consultants out there circling colleges and universities that are willing to take their money because the colleges and universities are desperate to find someone who knows how to do these things that they don't know how to do. In my other world, we did not like consultants. Consultants don't live in the house they build.
Right.
I want my people to live in the house they build. And they're more confident, they're better equipped, and they produce more, and we have good insights and good data now on how our college should operate.
I want to get into a little bit about the new majors that you've brought on, and we touched on nursing briefly. I'd like to hear more about the nursing program specifically, but just some of the new ones that are enticing to students.
Sure. So once again, coming from the corporate world, I look at things from the student experience. I work my way backwards. The student experience has to ultimately be that they have a marketable career and skill set right? A marketable degree so that they can pursue a career with a skill set where they can progress. Liberal arts colleges, liberal arts are important. There's no one, well, I don't say there's no one, but I've embraced liberal arts my entire career. I like to think I'm well-read. I've turned to figures in literature, theology, philosophy, my entire career in advertising at times that were I was struggling. Whether it's Joe March from Little Women, or Ahab from Moby Dick, or Sid Author, or whoever the character was, I would draw on their experience to get through some very tough times. So liberal arts is important, foundational, no matter what career. However, if a student wants a liberal arts degree, let's say in art history, my experience tells me, why don't you do a double major in art history and marketing and then go run a museum? Go be a curator. Combine those skills.
Figure out how to get a skill in order to do what you love.
So you have a marketable career.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
One student the other day said to one of my vice presidents of academics, she said, you know, I'm interested in the FBI, but I also like animals. So I said, well, they have a canine unit in the FBI.
Perfect fit.
Why don't you think about combining those? Right. How about that? Right. That's what higher ed wasn't equipped to do because everything operates in a silo. So the nursing program, for example, part of our mission is to serve the needs of the community, recognize the needs of the community, and respond to that. So in my tenure, which is about 2.5 years now, we went from about 125 nurses in the program to now we have over 300, maybe 325. The community.
So you more than doubled it.
Sure. Start at Jamaica Hospital, go to Kings County Hospital, go to Maimonides Hospital, Brooklyn Hospital Center, Presbyterian Hospital, and on and on. Those hospitals in the South Shore of Queens and Brooklyn, they need nurses. They need nurses who are culturally like those communities. So our nursing population represents those communities, and we're able to offer as many clinicals as are available because clinicals are important in the nursing education. A nurse has to have a clinical practice in a hospital. So with relationships with all those hospitals, Wyckoff and on, we provide those clinicals to our nursing students. We've got a state-of-the-art, best-in-class nursing facility. It's only 2 years old, and it's all brand new. So we've got a booming nursing program. We want to add on to that. We want to add advanced nursing degrees and maybe some other areas. I'm happy to report that we've just achieved the gold standard of NCLEX passing rates. The NCLEX is it's the CPA exam of nurses, if you will, or the bar for lawyers. And we've passed the gold standard of 80% pass rate. So our nurses are doing well. They're flourishing. We've reinvested in the staff. We've reinvested in equipment. We've gotten some wonderful grants. Nydia Vasquez for the Congress worked with us to get us a grant to support our nursing program. So we're firing on all cylinders when it comes to nursing.
And it does seem like, obviously, it's very fitting given what New Yorkers went through in the last 5 years with COVID and everything else, you know, recognizing maybe even if people did not just how critical our healthcare workers are.
Well, that's where the faith issue and the need for an identified need come into place. Because in the end, when we look back, clear, the nurses are the ones who got us through COVID.
Right.
So we owe them a debt of gratitude.
Without question. Without question. Give me a couple other examples, majors that you've either enhanced or expanded and how that has been working out in terms of drawing more students.
Sure. So one of the things that I noticed when I came on board was a graduate program. We had a need for a graduate program. We have a college in the heart of Brooklyn that did not have a robust graduate program. So we began investing there. So we started to computer science, management and technology, areas where are needed in the workplace that we didn't have master's degrees. Now, when I graduated college, it was enough in some sense to just have a bachelor's degree. You could go pretty far with a bachelor's degree. That's just not true anymore. In many cases, you need an advanced degree. I tell the students, I say, look, statistically, you're going to live to be 100. And that's a good thing. So you're going to need several careers throughout your lifetime.
Right.
It's the way technology changes.
It's the way it's changing. Right?
So you better get used to adding different credentials, different degrees, different things. I tell them, reinvent yourself every 3 to 5 years. That's a good thing. Learn a new technology. Learn a new language. Learn to play an instrument. Take up dance. Take up exercise. You'll broaden your network of people. You'll be more interesting. You'll be a more interesting human being, and you'll have a fuller life. So you've got to keep doing that. So offering those graduate programs were key. Now we have a couple of thousand graduate students that we didn't have prior. Engineering, something that's needed. We did affiliation agreements with Manhattan University. They have a well-respected, well-regarded award-winning engineering program. So now the students can go to St. Francis College for 2 years, achieve an associate's degree in chemical, mechanical, civil engineering, and go to Manhattan College, Manhattan University now, for the next 2 years and get their engineering degree. Education. There's something coming in education that we have to address. We've got teachers retiring by the thousands and very few new teachers in the pipeline because somehow education has gotten a bad reputation. Maybe in some cases deserved, but not really. We have to teach students. We've got the students of immigrant families now who are starting elementary school, and we need teachers to bring them in the system. So regardless of your position on all of this back and forth, we want to educate young children. We don't care where they come from. They need to be educated. And it's cliche to say they are the future, but what else is if they're not, right? So we have an obligation. So we've doubled down on our education program, and we're working with the city. We're working with some outside help to also offer competency-based education. Let's say people who've worked in the school system, but not technically as teachers, we want to give them credit for their community, their career-based education so that they can become a teacher in a year by just taking several credits and then go on to get their master's. So there are all these pockets of opportunity, whether it's education, whether it's computer science, whether it's engineering. We now have a computer science major. We have a bachelor's and we have a master's degree. From that comes AI, cybersecurity, all the things that are needed because the students have to go into the marketplace ready to go with a skill set to get a job. You know, there are so many issues surrounding that. Everyone talks about the student loan debt, the issue. Students can't pay back their loans. They say it's $2 trillion in outstanding loan debt, which is probably correct. But I always put this question to anyone I speak with about that. Let's talk about who got the money. The colleges got the money.
Mm-hmm.
The students just passed it through. So the colleges had an obligation to make sure that they had marketable careers to pay back that loan.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I see it as
an investment.
Yeah. It's both sides of the same coin.
Right.
But the colleges aren't taking any accountability or responsibility for the money they've taken from the government to educate students. We didn't do that. I speak to students and I say, when you finish your education, whether it's a bachelor's degree, master's degree, PhD, whatever it is, I want you in some capacity to be able to finish this sentence with a noun. I am a teacher. I am a doctor. I am a lawyer. I am a nurse. I'm an engineer. I'm a journalist. I'm a graphic artist, and on and on. You need to, because that's your professional credential. And no matter where you go in the world, you are that. So if you're a nurse in New York City, and life takes you to Norman, Oklahoma. Guess what you are in Norman, Oklahoma? You're a nurse. Those skills are transferable. And with the mobility now that exists, not only in the country, but in the world, you need those credentials to follow you. And that's the outcome we want for our students, for investing their faith and their money in our college with an outcome where they then can prosper and change society using Franciscan values.
We are coming up on time, but I did want to ask you, give me a sense of your student body. Is it mostly Brooklyn? Is it the city? Is it new immigrants? What does the student body look like?
It's all of that. It's all of that and more. As I said earlier, Brooklyn is a microcosm of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Every culture, every race, every religion. But our students come from all over the world. They come from 70-plus countries. They speak 40 different languages all across the globe. I think it's important for higher ed to understand, or at least put into practice, the reality that 85%, 80 to 85% of the world's population live in emerging markets. Now, if you think about the talent that's needed to solve the world's problems, you have to go where the people are, right, as a resource. So colleges have to embrace and bring people from all cultures, all walks of life. Interestingly, our students are not majority Catholic, even though it's St. Francis College. They're not majority Catholic. It goes back to students don't really identify with any particular religion. So it's every religion, every faith, every culture, every walk of life we embrace, and everyone comes in on the same playing field, on the same platform. No one is more equal than anyone else, and the students feel that, and they love that. And the thing that I love about it most is their experience is similar to my experience from where I was born and where I came through. And I can speak with confidence, full-throated to them, about what they need to do to succeed. And I want to stand as a symbol of that success, having come through a similar path that they came through, and show them that it's entirely possible. I don't want my young people to have a perpetual victim mindset. And there are bad actors out there in the media that want them to have this perpetual victim mindset. No, they're going to be the foundation of their own success because they're going to have the skills to achieve without having to rely on any outside forces. If you're talented, if you're good at what you do, and if you have a strong work ethic, you will be successful. It's nothing more than that, and that's what they need to know.
And real quickly, I just want to know, you guys have also managed to put things on a sound financial footing. I think that's important also, right?
Sure. So I had some very fine teachers in my other world who taught me sound financial practices, which I feel that colleges and universities don't exactly embrace.
They always do, right?
Every other week, it seems you read about another college that, by the way, I take no pleasure in the colleges not succeeding. Right. That's awful. The knock-on effect of the students and the interruption in their education, some of them may recover, some of them may not recover, and that's a tragedy. So that's also part of my obligation, to make sure that the fundamental core operating model of the college is sustainable without hoping that some donor gives me $1 billion or some government gives me no. The operating model, the fundamental operating model of the college with the resources that I know are available today is what I build the future financial operating model of the college on. We had our problems, we had our issues like everyone else, but we've turned the corner, and now we're on a path to sustainability and success.
And just to be clear, if someone did offer you $1 billion, you'd probably take it, right?
I want to know the conditions around that.
There's because, always conditions.
Of course. Always conditions. Of course, yeah, but I would take a very, very hard look.
You'd have to
take a very hard look
it, right?
at that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
No, that's fair. All right. Tim, thank you so much. This has been really enlightening. We're going to leave it there.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure.
The Lobbying Insider is a production of Davidoff, Hutcher & Citron, LLP, New York's premier middle market law firm, practicing in over 20 areas, including commercial litigation, economic development, real estate, and of course, government relations. The Lobbying Insider is produced by Joe Benti, and our sound recording engineer is Devante Addison. Publicity by Jody Fisher PR, with Beth Ann Mayer at Lemon Seed Creative managing social media. Our podcast platform manager is Monica Thomas. I'm Zach Fink, host of the podcast, and if you'd like to help us spread the word about our show, please share it with colleagues and friends, and be sure to subscribe on your platform of choice. It can be found on Apple, Audible, Google, iHeart, Podbean, and Spotify platforms. Thanks for joining us.